Oh, no problem. How are you guys?
Doing well. Doing well and getting ready for the next one coming up in Penn State football, but still thinking with one eye toward next summer. Let's start with this. The Appalachian League, this was a relatively easy one because I believe Major League teams owned those teams. So they're going to transition to wooden bat. You wrote an article late last week, about the New York Penn League as a proposal. So what do you know about the New York Penn League and the proposal of collegiate wooden bat?
So MLB laid out a proposal that would transition at least some teams in New York Penn League, and I emphasize some. It's not like the Appalachian League. This is unlikely to be an across-the-board type thing. But some teams in the New York Penn League to be part of a new, excuse me, I'm about to sneeze, but a new summer wood bat, amateur wood bat league. And the idea of it is that it would be, the Appalachian League would be for rising freshmen, rising sophomores. The Cape Cod League would probably, under this, still be kind of the destination for the top rising juniors.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea for this league is it would be the destination league for the top rising seniors, which seems like a little bit of a misnomer because those are guys who are getting drafted. Under the old system, they would be playing the summer wood bat league. But now, Major League Baseball has moved the draft back from early June to the middle of July, second week of July. And so there's now enough time for those players, if they aren't part of the College World Series and all, to play another 5-6 weeks in advance of the draft. And that the proposal was to have that league basically be New York Penn League affiliate. What have the New York Penn League teams do that and fill that perceived need for Major League Baseball.
And it would be about, what, a 60-game season in that neighborhood?
The initial proposal is 60. From later, from what I understand, is it may be bumped up to as high as like 68,
okay,
which is still obviously 8 games short of what currently is, which is 76. And that has been a sticking point for some of the teams in the league because, you know, if you do well, 76, that's, well, I should put it in home games. You know, to go even from 76 to 68 means you lose 4 home dates.
Right.
Well, again, if you're a successful team, 4 home dates is a good bit of money that you're saying goodbye to.
Right, and that's exactly what State College, I mean, State College is a successful franchise. Those 4 home dates, they want very, very much. When would they like to play this league? Because under the old New York Penn League system, they would begin right around June 17, 18, somewhere around there, and they would end Labor Day weekend. What is the thought process on what a season would look like with this particular league?
You really can't start it much earlier than very, very in Memorial Day, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't really. Before that, the players, these are college players. Before that, the players are still in college.
Right.
So Memorial Day-ish, and the thought is from everything I've been told, is that the idea is to have this league play through early August. Again, the same thing that we just talked about.
Yep.
You know, because this is on the academic year, by early August, you're kind of teetering out that you need to send everyone home. So it would be a little bit earlier start than what has been the case in the past, and obviously also an earlier finish than what has been the case in the past.
All right. Now, some New York Penn League teams would be in this. How close are we to resolution as to who makes the 120 when this is all said and done? Are they close to that resolution at this point?
From everything I understand, yes. Now, close may not mean every final piece is absolutely finalized, but I expect that we are going to hear something in the near future. And by near future, I expect we're going to hear something in the next 2 weeks.
By the time the winter meetings aren't until December, so that you think before the winter meetings we'll know more?
Right now, the best I understand, yes. We do have, we have before the winter meetings, we have the owners' meetings, which, like the winter meetings, are going to go virtual this year.
right.
because of the coronavirus pandemic. But they're still going to have them. And so I am making a supposition. I don't want to say this in my reporting. A supposition of mine is that the owners' meetings are going to be a logical time for the final part of this to be signed off on the MLB side. And if they're, and assuming that there are not hurdles that would prevent that from happening on the MILB team side, that would be a logical time around which to kind of announce this or finalize this. So I'm expecting them. The election's over now. That was a key part. They were not willing to do anything before the election. The election's over, and everyone needs this. Everyone needs to know some finality on what are they working for 2021. November, by the end of November, I would expect, not that this would go into December.
Peter Friend is someone who owns either all of or part of five minor league franchises, including the Williamsport Crosscutters 60 miles from here. What role has he played in all this, and what has it meant to have him on the minor league baseball side?
So you're right. Peter Friend was hired basically, there wasn't really a term to it, but the way I would describe it is he is now working with Major League Baseball, and he is working with minor league baseball owners with Major League. So I would describe him, again, this is a lot secondhand, but I would describe it as kind of a variety of roles. One is to be a sounding board. Now MLB has someone working directly with them who, as they're working through issues on this, can immediately provide kind of that feedback of, no, as an operator, this doesn't work or this works, or have you thought about maybe we could do this? So that's one component of it. Another is that he's in communication with MILB owners and working to kind of lay out and convey to them some of the message from MLB. So, again, it's not his title, but if you describe him as kind of this go-between in some ways also, someone who absolutely, because he is an owner, understands the needs of minor league operators as in the New York Penn League, because as you said, Williamsport, but then all the way up to AAA, because he also owns Memphis.
Yep.
So to have that ability to say, like, I understand the needs of minor league owners at a variety of levels, also kind of provides kind of a very useful resource for Major League Baseball to be able to provide very instant feedback on this works, that doesn't work, that's going to be tough, here's why, things like that.
Yeah, because it's interesting having that kind of liaison, right? Because minor league baseball has no leverage in this, but how much would Major League Baseball contribute to this model? Because as an independent model, you have to pay the entry fee. The expenses are higher. The return might be higher, but you still have to do that. The Atlantic League has certainly had successful franchises. Somerset, New Jersey, obviously, is one. Because they might end up with a team. We'll see. But how important has it been without leverage that he's there to have them represent? And how much will Major League Baseball contribute financially to help out that model you talked about with collegiate players?
So with that model, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of MLB financial support, but that's where the summer amateur part comes in, which is, the key thing with these players is you can't pay them. They lose their college eligibility if you pay them.
Right.
Which has been across the country, has been a massive reason for the expansion of summer college leagues, because owners across the country have figured out that they can provide a minor league baseball-like experience and do so without the responsibility and without even the ability to pay the players. So, obviously, they would not, right now, New York Penn League teams don't pay the players. Those are paid by their major league club.
That's right.
Under this, they wouldn't pay the players
because
they would be amateurs. Now, you may have to, finding housing, host families, all that becomes even more important in this than it has been in the past. But, that's kind of a almost one-to-one relationship. Now, you are probably whether it's through dues, through Trent Baseball Report, which is under this proposal, would be the operator of this league, not Major League Baseball, but the showcase group that does showcases around the country. But with either they would pay for the coaches, which would be funded by dues paid by these teams, right, or you'd be responsible at team level for paying for the players. But I guess that the best answer I can get on that is that Major League Baseball doesn't provide a lot of direct financial support currently, and that wouldn't change. It wouldn't be a lot of additional, there may be some, but not a whole lot of additional out-of-pocket costs for these New York Penn League clubs. What it would do, though, is it would be less dates, which means less revenue in. And I think for some New York Penn League teams, they may look at it and say, we're better off, you know, they're going to at least look at seeing, are we better off if we're not going to be part of the 120 that remain in affiliate baseball, that they say, are we better off looking to independent, which now is professional partner leagues, but these other leagues, like the Atlantic League, mm-hmm, like the American Association, like the Frontier League, where then they would have costs. They would have hundreds, you know, $200,000, $300,000 right, in additional cost to pay the players. But at the same time, you would also get more dates. And so more dates means that you would also bring in more revenue. Right. And, you know, it's a trade-off. Right. There's a lot of figuring and discussions going on right now as teams try to figure out what is the best path for them.
Right, plus there's an entry fee. Because obviously, yes, to enter the league, there's an entry fee. In the Atlantic League, the entry fee is a seven-figure fee.
Correct. Yeah. Now, it's possible, again, I want to emphasize possible, not guaranteed, but it is possible that potentially, because MLB is now partners with these independent leagues.
Right.
They're no longer independent technically. It's going to take them a while to get adjusted. These professional partner leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is possible that there will be at least, you know, cut, you know, rate or some other considerations where maybe, because MLB has promised to offer viable baseball in these cities that are left out of the 120, that maybe there are ways where some of those very significant issues, like franchise expansion fees, things like that, are somewhat reduced, at least, because maybe MLB helps out on that. And again, I'm saying there's the possibility of that. I want to make it clear, I'm not saying that's guaranteed by any stretch.
When I believe you covered Macon, and then Macon lost,
yep,
their affiliation with the Braves, went independent. They didn't, not the collegiate wooden bat deal, but went independent, but continued to thrive and be successful, correct?
They actually did something with that. So, I should lay this out. So Macon was in a situation where the Braves had said they wanted significant stadium upgrades.
Right.
Macon did not do so. They then got Rome, Georgia, another city in Georgia, mm-hmm, offered to build a stadium for the Braves. The Braves left it there. In that case, the stadium stayed dark for a few years. It actually was set,
okay,
for the TV show Brockmire one,
oh,
year. But, you know, but it wasn't, and that was a nice nostalgia for me looking at the press box.
Right.
Nice. But then they are now, then a Coastal Plain Summerwood Bat League team came to town, the Macon Bacon. And, mm-hmm, to the credit, again, a lot of this comes down to the quality of your operation. To the credit of the owners and operators of the Macon Bacon, they draw smaller, shorter seasons, but they draw more fans for the Macon Bacon now than they did when they were the Braves Class A affiliate. That's kind of like a best-case scenario where Savannah, down the road, lost their Mets affiliate, and it's been replaced by Coastal Plain League. That is probably one of the two or three most successful Summerwood Bat teams in the country. They sell out every game. You know, they have in a stadium that was built in the 30s, I believe, maybe 1940 at the latest. You know, and they do an incredible job. There are examples like that. But again, one of the keys about that is a lot of that is down to the operator, down to the quality of the experience for people who come to the ballpark. As much as I love player development, as much as that's important to me,
yes,
seeing future major leaguers and all that, the simple reality that I've been told by many a minor league GM is the vast majority of the fans in the stands that's not what they're there for.
Right. They're there for fun and the experience of it. Yep.
And if it doesn't, the play can't be off. You know, you can't have a guy throwing 68 miles an hour and can't throw strikes.
Right.
And the game drags on for 4 hours. Can't be that the shortstop throws the ball over the first baseman's head five times in a row. But if it's representative baseball, that doesn't make a whole lot of difference in your attendance year in, year out.
There will be some New York Penn League teams that survive to the 120 in all likelihood.
I'd be stunned if there's not.
Right. Are you willing to say at this point, at the moment, who has the best shot of getting there, or do you want to stay conservative on that at this point for obvious integrity reasons?
I want to stay conservative for this. I stayed away from saying so-and-so's in, so-and-so's out.
Yes.
And the best way I can do this is the way to explain that is these are people's lives. I mean, these are, you know, people's livelihoods. And also, they're, you know, in case of owners, they own these clubs. I don't want to damage anyone by reporting anything that's not 100% absolutely certain. And again, I've been told very recently the final 120 is probably not fully set.
Right.
Well, every time I try to build a puzzle, this is a jigsaw puzzle, and every time you take out one piece, you kind of end up having to replace about six other pieces a lot of times.
Right.
So if I get my hands on this is the final 120, I'm going to report that because that's factual, but it's not speculative. I hear a lot of rumors, but everything I've heard so far is speculative, and I'm not willing to go there when it's speculative. I'm confident that this is the reality.
Right, and that's why I phrased the question the way I did, because
I knew
you were probably going to answer it that way, but at the same time, the audience, it's something that if you were willing to talk about it, the audience would want to hear about it. I had a feeling you weren't, so I just wanted to phrase the question that way to open the door for you to answer it the way you were most comfortable. So
I appreciate that. But now, again, I will say this. There are teams, there are teams in the New York Penn League that would have a very hard time supporting full season baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other teams that you look at, you would say they probably won't have any issue at all supporting full season baseball.
Right.
The ones who won't have any issue at all, does not guarantee they'll make it. But there are teams who you could, I would say, comfortably say, it's hard to envision that as a full season club. That's not what this is. The market's really there to support. And in those cases, it's unlikely that they're going to make it to the 120.
JJ, absolute pleasure. Appreciate it very, very much. The audience appreciates it, and can't wait to talk to you again very soon about all this.
Sounds good. Thank you.